Only thing that stops a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun.
There's Wayne LaPierre, the CEO of the National Rifle Association, with something that's become kind of a motto for the NRA. Well, according to a new report by Mother Jones Magazine, a bad guy with a gun might be the NRA's top lawyer. In a shocking discovery, Mother Jones found that the general counsel for the NRA, Robert Dowlett, was convicted in the 1960s of second-degree murder and spent years in prison for shooting and killing an acquaintance. But eventually the case was overturned by the Indiana Supreme Court due to a flawed police investigation. Dave Gilson is a senior editor at Mother Jones and went through more than 2,000 pages of court documents and testimony to write the story. And in unearthing Robert Dowlett's past, Dave Gilson says, we can learn a thing or two about his role at the NRA.
Robert Dowlett is currently the general counsel of the NRA, which means he's basically their top lawyer. He's been with the organization for more than 35 years, and he's been involved very deeply in shaping their legal strategy, both in and outside the courtroom. So when he hasn't been writing briefs, he's also been sponsoring research on gun rights. He's been writing legal articles, putting forward the argument that eventually the Supreme Court acknowledged in 2008 and 2010 in the Heller and McDonald cases.
Which overturned gun bans in places like D.C.
That's correct, in D.C. and Chicago.
So it's fair to say that Robert Dowlett has been instrumental in shaping the constitutional and legal justification for the NRA's expansion of gun rights, right?
I think that's right. I think he's been very influential. He's well respected within the community of Second Amendment scholars and lawyers. He has a very low profile outside of the NRA and outside of that world. But when you dig into what he's been doing over the past 35 years, you realize that he's really had his fingers in a number of key legal strategies and victories over those years.
So let's go back a little bit further in time, Dave Gilson. Take us back to 1963. Describe the crime that Robert Dowlett was convicted of.
So on April 15th, 1963, a woman named Anna Marie Yoakum was found dead, shot in her home in South Bend, Indiana. She had been shot three times, apparently at close range. There were no witnesses. The cops arrested Robert Dowlett, who was then 17, and began to suspect him of having committed the crime. Yoakum had been his girlfriend's mother. They knew there was some bad blood between him and the mother. And eventually they made him their main suspect.
And he was eventually convicted of second-degree murder.
He was. And the circumstances of that conviction are interesting. After his arrest, he was held for 2 days without a lawyer. The cops really grilled him pretty hard. They said that at the end of those 2 days, he confessed everything voluntarily and also led them to the murder weapon, which was buried in the city cemetery. Dowlett said, look, I was denied the right to see a lawyer and the right to remain silent, and essentially they forced a confession out of me. And eventually the Indiana Supreme Court agreed and said that his confession had to be thrown out. They reversed his conviction and ordered a retrial. However, that retrial never took place.
And how long did he spend in prison?
So he was sentenced to life in prison when he was 19 in 1964, and he did not get out of prison and jail until 1970. So he was on a six-year legal odyssey waiting for his cases to be appealed, overturned, and thrown out.
And what do we know about the path from recent convict to having his conviction overturned, getting out of prison, and then becoming a lawyer for the NRA?
After getting out of prison, he returned to the Army. He had been in the Army when he was convicted. He served in the 82nd Airborne. He then went to Indiana University in South Bend, where he met his wife. He became involved in veterans affairs. And then he ended up at Howard Law School in Washington, D.C. And it's there, according to one of his colleagues, that he really began to think of Second Amendment rights as civil rights. And that is a theme that you can see in a lot of his writing since then.
Why did so many years pass when no one knew or remembered this conviction?
I think it's a really interesting question, and I think part of it has something to do with this conviction took place in the pre-digital age, and all of the records related to the case are on paper. They were stored away in archives, and as time went on, they became harder and harder to access. You can't find them online. It's not a matter of just typing in his name and calling up his court records. So I think as time went on, the case essentially became forgotten in the sense that the way we now remember criminal cases is digitally. And, you know, we think we have everyone's information at our fingertips, but 50 years is a long time, especially when something is sitting in a file folder back in Indiana.
Well, we hear a lot these days, especially with technology, with DNA evidence and other types of crimes, about wrongful convictions or just convictions that are overturned on cases of legal technicality or places where the situation is gray. But how does a conviction, maybe a person's past life, kind of inform what we think we know about their activism today at a place like the NRA?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. And I want to make very clear that my article does not try to retry Robert Dowlett or establish his guilt or innocence. I think there's both sides to the story are laid out pretty clearly. But I think that larger question of how did his experience as a criminal defendant and one who may have been mistreated by the system, how that affected his career, I think is a really relevant question, and it gets to the heart of his thinking about gun rights. When you read his legal articles, you see that he talks about Second Amendments as just another civil right, no different than, say, the rights of the accused, the rights of a defendant to have a lawyer, to remain silent. He specifically cites the Miranda ruling, which was very similar to his case, and again, talks about how because the government will take advantage of defendants' rights, this is all the more reason that people should have the right to bear arms to defend themselves against the government.
David Gilson is a senior editor at Mother Jones and author of the article The NRA Murder Mystery about the conviction for second-degree murder in 1963 of the NRA's top lawyer. Dave Gilson, thank you.
Thank you.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.